guess the mic is on. Well, last week, thank you, Eric, by the way. Last week we started talking about having a conversation about forgiveness. And I don't think we could ever stop talking about forgiveness. It's something that we're always in process of doing, that more often than not, we don't recognize when we ought to forgive people, and we like to push it under the rug. But I think it's something that Jesus was really hammering home when he made it pretty clear that we need to forgive others first before we're forgiven, in that verse following the Lord's Prayer. So what are some things that maybe you learned from last week or you're thinking about a little bit more over the last 7 days because of what we talked about last week? I mean, it's wide open. Love to hear just the impact that it had on your heart. Yes, Stacy.
I mean, just talking so much.
Hey, it's all good.
I had this person that we were really good friends, and we kind of had a falling out or whatnot. And I ran into them at the grocery store, like later on the evening after we left here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, and it's okay for it not to be the same.
Right. Because I think that gets us back to the point where, you know, forgiveness is not reconciliation. It's, you have to work on building the trust back in order to get back to that place. But forgiveness is a decision that we can make on our own in that relationship with the other person. We can't control how they respond to us, but we can control whether or not we become bitter or decide to separate ourselves from the other person emotionally. Thanks, Stacy. Anybody else? I know it's a really emotional topic because I think it gets to the core of ourselves and how we feel about one another, and sometimes that can be pretty touchy and pretty personal. And so it's cool if you don't want to share in front of everybody. But just know that we're talking about it again this week just because it's such a really important topic, because if we are harboring unforgiveness toward other people, it doesn't create a good foundation for us to grow in Christ. It causes us to be separated from God. And so that's why we're pushing forward again. So, yeah, we talked about roadblocks to forgiveness. Some of those things were bitterness, anger, other people that keep talking to us and saying, well, how we shouldn't forgive this other person. What were some of the other things that we talked about that were roadblocks? Fear. Yeah, definitely fear. I think another one, too, is releasing control. We don't want to do that. When we're harboring anger or unforgiveness against somebody, then we are having to release control. Yeah, definitely. So let's not get stuck in this idea that when we decide to forgive someone that we're condoning that behavior, or that we're thinking or saying to that other person that it's okay. Thanks, Shelley.
And just because you forgive them doesn't mean that you're going to get a positive response from them.
That's right. Exactly. Because sometimes people are not going to give you anything back. And it's really hard. But it's something that you have to work through, because Jesus has called us to forgiveness. And it's a really radical kind of way to deal with relationships. Because we can't just say, well, they hurt me, so therefore this relationship is over. No. Because of the way that Christ has forgiven us completely and radically, like, he wholly and entirely accepts us no matter what we've done. He forgives us. So So we are then called to forgive others in the same kind of way. And that's why I said this is a process that lasts an entire lifetime, because you never get there completely anyway. So you have to forgive others first and do it repeatedly. You don't get to just do it once and you're like, I'm done. I'm like, all right, I've got it all figured out. No, we have to keep doing it over and over and over again. It might get easier after you do it more frequently, but it still is a challenging thing. So forgiveness, again, is not the same as rebuilding trust, which we talked about. And it's a process. And so it's not just this transactional thing that happens. You just have to keep forgiving sometimes, especially when it's a really large hurt that's happened to you. That a lot of times things will come back up in our hearts where we get frustrated with that person again. But we have to keep laying it down and keep forgiving. Forgiveness must consistently exist for a community to thrive and grow. So forgiveness and love and grace and all of those really incredible things that are all connected to each other have to be the core of what it means to be community, because we are going to hurt each other. I will sit here right now and say, I promise I will hurt you. I don't want to hurt you, but I'm going to. And in order for us to grow in community together, you have to be able to forgive me, and I have to be able to forgive you. So that's why this is really, really important in the life of, in the body of a church. So we talked a little bit about the definition of forgiveness. We talked about pardoning, to cancel a debt. And today we're going to center a lot more on to give grace as we talk about the parable of the prodigal son. So when you're looking at forgiveness, you sometimes think, okay, grace, I get how that's connected. The definition of grace is unmerited favor. And so in the core of what it means to forgive someone is that you're releasing your right to be able to be the person that's right in the situation. So this other person has wronged you, and you then claim this opportunity to say, I'm right, I refuse to forgive you. But when we're extending grace, that thing that they didn't earn, we're then able to forgive. So we're giving that person something that they don't necessarily deserve. Forgiveness definitely requires us to extend grace. We can't be a forgiver without giving grace. You're graciously letting go of your right to be right, and those we forgive don't need to earn our forgiveness, because it must come from grace. When I was thinking about this more and spending some time in that connection between grace and forgiveness, this was kind of the hardest thing, the thing that seemed most radical to me, because it's absolutely nothing about what that other person does that allows us or calls us to forgive them. They don't need to be repentant for us to forgive them. They don't need to do anything for us to forgive them, because forgiveness is so much more about us than it is about the person that we forgive. And I think that's where, when Jesus is talking about how we need to forgive others so that he can forgive us, it centers on how God forgives us, because it's nothing that we have done that earns us any kind of forgiveness from God, because grace is that free gift that's been given. So it's like this little microcosm of what it's like to extend God's grace to the world is how we respond to other people in forgiveness. I don't know if you guys can see this picture very well, right here. It's pretty cool. Those of you who are over here probably can't see it at all. Sorry. It's Rembrandt's painting of the parable of the prodigal son. My friend Sarah is over here. I didn't know she was going to be here today. It's kind of cool. We were in the class together last fall called Spiritual Autobiography and Ministry, and we had to pick a spiritual autobiography to read for the class. And I knew that I liked some of Henry Nouwen's stuff because I'd read it before, so that I chose one of his books. And the parable of the prodigal son has always been something that I've loved and read over and over and over again, and so I picked this book. So it's a little like book report day, just not entirely. So it's called The Return of the Prodigal Son. And so what happened is that Henry had seen this painting, like a picture of it somewhere. Somebody had given it to him. Or no, I know what it was. He saw it in someone's office. And he spent some time looking at it and just was really enamored of this painting. And so he went to, it's in the Hermitage in St. Petersburg, Russia. And he got some sort of inside deal where this guard let him in. And so he got to sit with the painting for hours on end for like a couple of days, just pondering this painting. And what's neat about this book is that he takes his perspective and understanding of Rembrandt's life and the things that he was going through up until the point that he painted this painting, which was at the end of his life, and how it related to the parable of the prodigal son. And so Henry Nouwen's a really incredible spiritual writer, and I do highly encourage you to read him. Super easy to read. And he just speaks, it's like he's having a conversation with you in the books that he's reading, or that he's writing. I mean, and most of them are like, this one's 139 pages. It doesn't take very long to read. So I just encourage you to pick it up. But this painting is really interesting because you've got what we can guess is this is the elder brother in the story. And obviously that's the lost son that's come home, is on his knees. And then the father embracing him. But I'd love for you guys, if you have a Bible, there's some hanging around if you don't have one. I see them around. Because this story is kind of long, and I didn't want to put it on a slide because you wouldn't be able to read it. The print would be too small. So we're looking at Luke 15, 11 to 32. This parable comes following two other parables that are about things that are lost. The first one is the parable of the lost sheep. And then there's a parable of the lost coin. And then comes the third, which if you do a little studying in the New Testament, things that come in threes, the third one's probably the most important. Sarah and I were also in the New Testament class together, so we learned that together. So this is the one that Jesus is setting us up to really pay attention to. So starting in verse 11, Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, 'Father, give me my share of the estate.' So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all that he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything." And that's really important because in the Hebrew culture, pigs were about the most unclean thing you can think of. And the fact that he was hanging out, wallowing with the pigs, eating, not even eating what they were eating, shows how devastatingly low his estate got, how desperate he was. "When he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare, and here I am, starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. 'Your brother has come,' he replied, 'and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound.' The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, 'Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. You never even gave me a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him. My son, the father said, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad, because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He is lost and is found. So, first I want to talk about the older brother, because I think a lot of times when we're considering forgiveness, we become like that older brother in our response to people. So my first question is, looking at the older brother in this picture, for those of you who can see it, what does his body language show you? I know this is not like a painting of the actual event or whatnot. This is an interpretation. But what does this look like? Yeah, he's closed off. Can you see? You guys can't see his face, probably. Eric can see his face. What does his face tell you, Eric?
I'm not sure.
You said unhappy? He looks unhappy. He's got a beard on, so we can't really see his face, like his mouth. So he's got the clasped hands. He's like you were saying, he's definitely closed off. He's not open at all.
He has a good posture.
He does. He's very straight.
Stiff.
He's stiff.
Stiff is different than good posture.
That's right. Okay. Right. That's true. Oh yeah. There's some steps down here. So he's kind of elevated higher over, so it's almost, there's like a domineering kind of posture that's happening. Yep, you're right. He is higher than his father. Good call, Herb. I like that. So how did he respond to the father giving grace to his younger brother? He was jealous. Yeah. Selfish. Resentful. Big time. So, one of the other parables that I thought about when I was reading this was the parable of the workers in the vineyard. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that one. It's the one where the landowner goes out to pick up some workers, and he picks up a few of them and brings them back, and they decide that their wage is a denarius, or like a day's wage, basically, for working in the fields. And then he goes back again several hours later and picks up some more people, and they're working in the vineyard. And then several hours later, he gets some more, like at 3 o'clock. And then he goes and picks up the last group of people at 5 o'clock, and they only work for an hour. And then it's time to pass out the wages. And everyone gets the same amount. And so the workers that were there slaving away for 8 hours or something were frustrated, because they got paid the same amount as the people that came at the very end. And so to me, it's a really similar attitude that those workers that had, that were there the whole day, that got paid the same amount as the workers that only worked an hour, is like the same thing. They are the elder brother. They're the older brother who's standing there and saying, well, I've been here. I've been working for you. I've been doing everything that you ask. And now you throw this big party for my brother. But what the father was saying is, instead, like, you've been with me the whole time. You are here. You've gotten to enjoy all of this stuff. So what's the deal? And it's the same response to those workers in the field as well. So we've got resentment and a lack of joy. So he sees his brother coming home. His father is full of excitement and joy and is, like, really ready to welcome him back home. And his older brother is just standing there, like, whatever. He wouldn't even go into the party. He's refusing to join in and is separating himself from everyone. And I think the thing that we need to remember is, this is who we become when we dismiss God's grace for ourselves and for other people. We have to be really careful of that, because a lot of times we want to stay in our anger. We want to stay in our resentment and our separation and our rightness. And even if even if it's something that we are actually right about, if we remain in that place and refuse to forgive, we're separating ourselves from the joy that Christ has for us in just living our lives, because we're putting ourselves over in this place where we just want to live in our anger. And what happens to anger when it festers, it creates bitterness, and it plants a root in our heart and in our lives that keeps us from being in community with other people. The older brother didn't want to go to the party. He didn't want to participate in the joy and the fun and eating that fatted calf. I'm sure the father would have been like, sure, bring your friends. Everyone can come. This party is open for everybody. But he would rather stand back and say, you won't even give me a goat, which in comparison to the calf, the goat has very little meat. There's not a lot to party on. There's not a lot to eat or share or enjoy. It's like, you wouldn't even give me this little bit. But the father comes back and says, I would have given you anything you wanted because you were here with me. So we have to remember that God is willing to give us everything that we ask for and desire, as long as we decide to be in community with him and not let the things that happen and go on between us and other people interfere with that relationship that we have with God. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. He was keeping score. Yeah. Right. And it was the brother's choice to enter into that. And the consequences of it was the hardship.
Something else, but I think the older brother has a lot of spiritual pride, which I think he's very careful of. I mean, why wouldn't he want his brother to be saved?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be the one thing that both the father and the son would both want for a loved one, that they'd be saved? What better thing could there be? And yet he let his spiritual pride get in the way of his brother's,
yeah, it's true. Pride was definitely a roadblock there, because he's like, I'm right. I was doing all the right things, but forgetting that like Sally was saying, the most important thing was that his brother is safe and that he's come home. Because I think a lot of times that bitterness and refusal to forgive puts us in a place where we forget the bigger picture and enjoy the fact that somebody has come home. So instead of the resentment that we oftentimes will gravitate to in our natural self, we need to dwell in gratitude, thinking about, I'm so thankful that I don't have to walk in my bitterness, thinking about if that person is coming to you and is saying that they're sorry for the things that they've done, be thankful that there's an awareness there, that there is something that was done wrong, and that's the beginning of a change. And the other thing that we need to do instead of being resentful and judgmental and bitter is that we need to walk in trust. And that trust oftentimes has to step up when this other person is not changing how they're behaving, or they're continuing to hurt you. So when we walk in trust, we're trusting that God is doing the work, and that we don't have to do the work of changing that other person, because we can't make other people respond differently. It's still their choice. Okay. So, the lost brother. So, how does he look over here? I have a little laser pointer. This guy. How does he look? He looks completely humble. I heard repentant. Look physically, just even look at his appearance. He looks ashamed.
He's on both knees.
Yep.
On two knees.
to the position of submission, for sure. Like, I don't know if you can see it, but he's got one shoe that's completely busted. The other one's almost messed up. He's got lots of tears in his clothing. I mean, in comparison to the clothing that his father is wearing. And even, I mean, the commentary on the painting says that, you know, these two people here are probably servants that worked in the father's household. And just in comparison to what you can see of their clothing to the sons, is that it shows that even the servants were dressed better than the lost son that came home. He was definitely ashamed. I think he recognized that because of his circumstances, that he realized how much he had done wrong and how he'd betrayed his father. And sometimes we have to walk through circumstances to be able to see when we've run far away from God. But sometimes we don't need circumstances to figure those things out. We just feel that separation from God. The thing about, what's interesting about him is that the son had an entire speech prepared to tell his father. He was ready to take a position of extreme loneliness, working as a servant in his father's household in order to be able, in some ways, to earn his father's forgiveness and to work back into his father's good graces. But the father's response wasn't, no, yeah, you got to work over in this field here. You're going to work 8 hours a day and you're going to sleep with the servants, sleep. You won't come to the table with me and the family. Complete opposite response. The sense that I get from reading the parable is that the father was waiting for the son to come home because he saw him from a long way off. It's not like he showed up at the door. He was prepared for him to come home. And his response when he saw him was that he ran to him and he put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet and he got a new robe for him. He set the other servants out to prepare a party. So by putting the ring on his finger and those sandals on his feet, he was restoring to him to his sonship. So the father's response to the son was, you can come back home completely. You don't need to work and do any of these things in order to come back to me. So one of the things that Judy brought up last week was about how we often don't forgive ourselves and the struggle that that causes and the separation that that causes between us and God because we're refusing to forgive even though God has forgiven us everything. And so when I was thinking about the lost brother, I was recognizing how we oftentimes approach God like, okay, God, I know I've done all these things and I'm beating myself up about it. But I can somebody, thank you. He wants us to come to him, but to not be beating ourselves up so much that we refuse God's grace. And one of the things that Nouwen talked about in the book that was a really incredible point to me was that one of the longest processes in our lives is learning how to receive forgiveness from God. When we recognize how big and how great and miraculous the work that God has done for us and on our behalf, we have to be able to open up and say, okay, I really believe that you've forgiven me and know that I don't have to work to earn that forgiveness in any way whatsoever. So we need to avoid being that prodigal son in the way that we approach God in receiving forgiveness. And the way that we approach others in receiving forgiveness. We don't need to work to receive that. That's a different process. That's the rebuilding trust process. Okay. So let's look at the father. Look at his body language. What's he doing? He's embracing, he's welcoming. He's what? He's meeting him on his level. That's really cool because his son is down on the ground and he's crouching down there with him. He's not having that higher position like the older brother. He's lowering himself. Cool. So how did the father respond to each of the sons? What did he do with them? Yeah, yeah. So what John said is that it seems like the father had low expectations. So in a sense, he allowed that son to go on his whims. He asked for the inheritance, and so the father gave it to him and just let him go freely, recognizing that he has to be willing and ready to be at home. He's not going to force him to be there. And that's what grace is about. It's not about forcing someone to be in a particular mold. It's allowing them the freedom to be who they are. And then when they're ready to come and embrace that relationship, being so excited that they're there. So obviously he's representing God in the parable. That's his role. And this is the person that we become when we love the way that God loves. And what was interesting to me is that the father didn't go after the son that was lost. He waited for him to come home. But he went after the older brother when the older brother refused to participate at the party. He found him and talked to him. And so what's interesting about that is that you see how the older brother and the lost brother are both in positions where they're separating themselves from relationship with the father. The father waits for the younger brother to come home. But the father goes after the older brother who's already at home but is refusing to participate in relationship with that family in forgiveness. And so I think it's good for us to remember that God isn't going to let us sit in our resentment, in our judgment. He wants us to come home and to be released from those things. He wants us to forgive as he has forgiven us, because that's the way that we're able to put ourselves in the position to accept God's forgiveness for us. Our ability to grant this kind of grace can only come from a deep experience of Christ. This is an economy that we cannot create on our own. It flies in the face of our natural inclinations of vengefulness, rightness, justice, and pride. God's economy is far different. The Father calls us each to love generously, remembering that we cannot, in fact, change the decisions of others. You must forgive over and over and over. 70 times, 7 times. Love big. Be prepared to have wide open arms to embrace the son that's coming home, as well as the son who remains, who is refusing unconditional love. So as we walk forward in understanding forgiveness in the way that it works in our lives, I think we have to recognize where we play the part of the older brother, where we play the part of the lost brother, and where we play the part of the father. Because our ultimate goal ought to be becoming the father, extending God's grace to others, to being the kind of people that are welcoming those home that have been lost, and also going after the ones that are living in their resentment and refusing to come home in that way as well. So I'm going to pray for us and pray for our meal because it's almost time to eat. God, we thank you so much that you don't allow us to stay where we are. You don't allow us to remain in our resentment and bitterness and pride and unforgiveness. You call us continuously and give us opportunities over and over again to let down those things and to be in relationship with you in the way that we forgive others. So God, I pray that we would respond to that call that you've given us so that we may grow even deeper in our relationship with you because we have let down those things that are roadblocks. God, help us to identify the places in our lives where we have unforgiveness. God, with the people that may surround us every day, or ones that we haven't seen in years, or ones who have passed on. Father, give us the desire to restore relationships, to welcome others home, and to be a wellspring of life for all those that touch our lives. God, we thank you for the food that's been brought before us today and for all the hands that have prepared it. God, I pray for our time of fellowship together, that we would be encouragers of one another, and that we would be able to share the love that you have for us to each person in this room today. We pray for all these things in your name. Amen. Cool. Thanks, guys. I don't think we have any particular instructions as to how we're supposed to proceed with eating today. Just, it's everything is on the other side. There's tables over there. There's tables over here. Sit wherever you want. Go outside. Just enjoy and spend time together. Thanks for coming today. Everybody's coming to church.